right, this is JP DeRoss, show number 210. First week of April 2018 here, Tim. And the weather is getting fantastic here. We'll probably have a short spring before it starts getting hot. But right now it is fantastic and allowing me to go walk in each night and get some exercise. And hopefully get out and shoot soon. Although I think Thursday, I'm off later this week. I've already signed up with Nikon. They did a little thing you got to fill out to send it in for repair. And she's going in for repair. I'm sending her this Thursday. So for the focus issues I've mentioned before, I'm just now getting around to that. Yeah, I know I mentioned a long time ago. Just now getting around to it. And I usually have the grip on the bottom and, and all that. When I took the grip off, like, wow, this thing feels so small. I like it like this. This is really nice. Because the grip does, you know, it adds the battery and adds the vertical shutter, but it makes it feel bigger and heavier and everything. So obviously I want to take all that off before I send it to them, because you want to send the bare minimum. And I'll take the lens off too before I send it to them. But that's going in the mail Thursday, and can't wait to get it back. And hopefully, what I always fear is that you send it in, they go, check that to us, nothing looked wrong. But, you know, I tried to detail all the issues I had with it, what I tried to solve it, and hopefully they will be able to redo it, because I can redo it with any lens. So hopefully, and you know, whether it's on a tripod or whatever. So hopefully they'll be able to fix it and send it back to me before I go on my cruise sometime this summer.
I just got a grip in the mail this past week. I finally broke down and bought one, because my cousin had one and he let me borrow it, and I absolutely love it.
Yes. Well, if you can get past this extra size, if that doesn't bother you, I know, like my mom, she doesn't like the bigger camera, because she has arthritis in her in her hands and she wants something smaller and lighter. So she doesn't like that grip. But for me, I don't mind the extra size. I actually like the extra size.
Right.
And I definitely like the vertical shutter. So I like that. And plus it gives you more battery power. And if you're out shooting for, you know, multiple hours, thousands of images, it'll let you do that. So, all right. So Tim, I got a question for you.
Shoot.
Are you right-handed or left-handed?
I am right-handed.
Right-handed.
I am in the right frame of mind.
You're right-handed. And what eye do you put up to the camera?
My right eye goes up to the viewfinder.
So when you get the camera, you put it up to your right eye.
Correct.
Like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way most cameras are designed, for you to put your eye up there. I should have warned you ahead of time. Hey, bring your camera with you.
Mm. I have to have one somewhere around. Because, I have a small one. Wait, let's see. Will this one work?
I don't know. But when you do that,
I don't even know if it works anymore.
When you do that, so out in chat, and anybody listening later, you know, what hand are you, right or left handed? And then what eye do you put up to the lens? And for me, if I put my right eye up to it, I'm right handed, but I shoot with my left eye. If you shoot with your right eye,
doesn't your hand get in the way?
That, so I'll tell you,
seems
that
weird for me. It's counterintuitive.
I've never heard, and this may be because I just haven't checked, and so maybe all you guys already know, but from what I have heard is that cameras are made for right-eyed people. And that way, when you put your eye up to it, your nose is not smudging the back of the screen.
Oh, yes.
Because when I do that, my nose smudges the back of the screen, because I'm putting my left eye up there. And, you know, then my right eye, leaving my right eye open, is kind of blocked by my right hand. Mm-hmm. So I do leave my right eye open sometimes, because you can still see some of the, like we're shooting a soccer field or something like that, you can still see some of the players and some of the action going on. But it's not as easy if you were shooting with your right eye and you have leaving your left eye open.
And one thing I've been teaching myself over the years, and I think it probably started with soccer, was to force myself to keep my left eye open and focusing around, or even when I'm doing portrait pictures, if you're doing street photography, not that somebody steps in front of you just as you're clicking off the picture. So I'm looking through the camera, but my left eye is open at the same time. And it's hard to get used to. You really have to work on it to get it to work. And I don't always do it, but a lot of times I will try to do it.
Yeah. And where I grew up down in South Louisiana, there wasn't much to do, and we shot pellet guns or BB guns or whatever all the time. And so everybody thought I was strange. Why are you right-handed but shooting with your left, you know, left? And it did feel a little funny, but when I put it on my right, it felt even worse. And so I always grew up that way. Well, there is a test to see whether you're right eye dominant or left eye dominant. Do you know the test, Tim?
No.
Okay.
That I do not know.
We're going to do a little test here tonight with Tim. Okay. I've already done it. So I'm going to show you a quick little video here. This is on Petapixel's site, but it's not their video. So just real quick, there's no audio because I don't know if there's music here, and you know, YouTube is crazy about copyright stuff. But we'll have the link in the show notes. So I'll just walk you through it. So what it's saying is, form a little triangle with your fingers like that. Doesn't have to be precise, but, you know, similar.
It's good because I had a diamond.
Then line up something somewhat in the distance, like that clock or something else, something that's not too, too close. And then when you have it lined up, you're going to want to close your left eye. And before...
Oh, it's definitely right eye dominant. So, because when I close my right eye, it's what I was focused on is actually way outside the triangle.
Yeah. So if you line it up, and then when you close your left eye, if the object stays in the center ish, then you're right eye dominant.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm definitely right eye dominant.
When you close your left eye, it goes off center like that, then you're left eye dominant.
Right.
And not that there's anything, you know, magical about that, but if you are left eye dominant and you're shooting with your right eye, you might want to try shooting with your left eye or vice versa.
Well, I'm definitely going to have to try now. And I'm going to ask my wife, because my wife is left-handed. So I'm going to ask her to try it and see what happens to her.
Yeah. And it's something that just so that we know that this works, because when I line it up, so you want to center it with both eyes open.
Mm-hmm.
And when I close my left eye, it shifts.
Okay. Yeah. So you're left eye dominant.
I'm left eye dominant. And when you close your left eye, it doesn't?
No. When I close my left eye, I could see it perfectly. When I close my right eye, it shifts. Way off skew.
So you're right eye dominant.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's easy to, and you know, every once in a while you and what I always think of when I'm looking at somebody, you're talking to them, and then where do you look at the person? Do you look at the right eye, the left eye? And you every once in a while you're focused like, where am I looking at this person, or where are they looking?
Yeah, and Gary says it also matters when you're playing pool. I guess, you know, anything you're lining up, I guess, with that.
Absolutely,
and you know, maybe just by nature we figured this out that, hey, this works better for me or whatever. But some people may have assumed that I'm right-handed, so I got to be right-eyed. And that could be the case. But it also could be the case that your right eye, like me, right eye, right-handed, but but left eye dominant. And I end up shooting with my left eye. That does mean that, you know, like I said, my nose smudges the camera. And there is a video on, and that also makes holding it a little bit not as steady, but there's a thing on, and I'll have this in the show notes, from Joe McNally. You've heard of Joe McNally, right? Mm-hmm. Where he's the same. I think he's right-handed and left eye dominant. And he's talking about the way he holds the camera can't get away from the nose smudging the back of the screen and the other issues. He has a method where the way he holds the camera that helps him hold it a little steadier, being that left eye shooter.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
So I thought that was a interesting article and something that I've always wondered, or I wondered when I was little or, you know, smaller, why am I shooting with my left eye? Shouldn't I force myself to shoot?
Did you notice it, or did somebody else point it out to you?
I never thought about it. Just I always just, you know, but back in the day when I somebody pointed out to me as I was shooting.
Right. So somebody else pointed it out to you. Why are you looking through your left eye?
What are you doing? That's the wrong eye. And I tried the switch. And it just didn't, it just felt so unnatural. It didn't work.
I feel like I'm going to punch myself in the nose.
What was funny is because they were right-handed and they were doing the right eye. Mm-hmm. So they were saying, this is the way it feels more natural. You'd only use your left eye if you're left-handed. Mm-hmm. And I'm not left-handed. I'm right-handed.
So now you tried to go into your right eye, I assume, and
I did, and
just
did not work.
Not comfortable
and
at
I
all.
Got to tell you, it's been a long time since I've shot a pelican, but doing a camera, it feels I can't do it right when I put the camera up to my eye. I'm sure with enough training I could, but the little test showed me that I'm left eye dominant. So why would I try and switch?
Jan is saying she tried the triangle method and it shows her to be left eye dominant, but she prefers shooting with the right eye.
Well, and that may be that you've trained yourself to do it one way through whatever, course of growing up, and making a switch may not be the best for you. Maybe that, would feel so awkward. You'd never be able to get it to work right for you. But, it's something to try. It's a neat little test there that I was interested to see if it actually worked, because it worked for me. It picked the right eye, and it worked for you, too.
Yes. No. I am going to have I'm going to have people try this now.
But I don't know if I'd want to make them – I don't know if I'd want them to switch the camera where they move this over there. They're not going to do it. But
no.
Assuming they could make one for us left-eye shooters and swapped everything, I still like holding it with my right hand.
Yeah.
Because I'm not left-handed. That's the problem. If you're left-handed, maybe you would like to hold it with your left hand.
To me, that would be so odd, holding my left hand.
I don't know if any left-handers are out there, but if you're left-handed, would you want to hold it with your left hand? Or because of all the years of holding it with your right hand, does that just seem natural?
Right. And it probably is.
It probably is.
I would think.
I think, our bodies get used to that muscle memory of doing it one way, whether you're left-handed or right-handed. You can muscle memory certain things into
absolutely.
It, and then that's where you stick. It may be much more difficult to learn to write with the opposite hand because that's such a precision thing. Or like me, it's not that precision. It's just kind of scribble.
Right.
but, shooting or something like that with your camera, it may be something you could do if you forced yourself, but it would still be difficult, I think.
Right.
All right, well, that was the right or left eye thing. I think it would be interesting if anybody came across that they're doing it the opposite of what the triangle test said and that they tried the other way and liked it. If you do, we'd love to hear from you. Send us, Tim and I, an email at podcast@jpegderoll.com. We'd love to hear what your experience was. Or post it into our Facebook group over there on Facebook if you're a member of the Facebook group. So that's the first one. Tim, you had an article that you wanted to discuss. Okay. Which one did you want to do first?
Yeah, you choose.
Let's do the drone guy.
Okay. And I don't know if everybody saw this. It was actually published about a week and a half ago. Guy over in Russia took his drone, and I don't think they even mentioned the type of drone he had. And I watched the video. It was about 26 minutes long. He took his drone, started it, and just went straight up, kept climbing until he hit 33,000 feet, which is amazing because I didn't think a drone could get that high. Amazing because here in the United States, we're not allowed to go over 400 feet, nevertheless 33,000 feet. And if you really think about it, the dangers of this, especially here in the States, a lot of commercial airliners fly somewhere between 32 and 36,000 feet. So I live in New York near JFK, LaGuardia airports, and you got a lot of flight paths that are around here. If I went up to 33,000 feet, well, I think I'd probably be well over most of the planes because they're coming in for landings.
Yeah.
But it's dangerous. But needless to say, it was amazing views that he took. He had the data on the screen. What really surprised me was as he got higher and higher, it reached negative 50 Celsius, which is approximately negative 58 Fahrenheit, which is freezing. And I wouldn't have thought the batteries would survive. But I guess the batteries were, considering he had it all the way on, they're probably pretty warm anyway.
Yeah,
I don't recall. And everything out there was metric unit scales for everything. But what a view when he got all the way up, and as you saw him get up there, and you could see the video that Mike has, you actually saw the curvature of the Earth from the height he was at. And then when he got to the very high end of it, suddenly it looked, and actually it almost looks like, Mike, you're at the point, around the 27-minute mark, where it started losing control, and he actually turned off the drone and let it free fall for some feet before he turned it back on. And I don't know if that was just to salvage the batteries. That's the only thing I could think of.
I will say, I almost hate to show this because I don't want to encourage people to do this. So he was in Russia, where apparently
in Siberia, where there's nothing around.
Apparently,
there's no laws.
Apparently, there's no rule in Russia limiting how high you can go. But common sense would tell you that, you know, I don't know. I imagine Russian airliners or whoever's got authority to fly through the Russian airspace, you know, they could fly in this altitude. That's a primary altitude of, you know, between, I think, 30 and 40,000 feet is where these airliners would be flying. It is a vast space, and, you know, likelihood of you hitting one is minimal, but you know, the risk.
But this is one drone. You have multiple people doing it.
Yes.
Sooner or later, something's going to hit, and that's going to be, you got a plane that, let's say a plane does hit this at what are they traveling about, 500-600 miles an hour, yeah, somewhere upwards of there. It hits it, it's probably going to be catastrophic.
Right. And you know, you gathered your nice little video and shared it on YouTube, and you killed 500 people.
Right.
Yeah.
So that it's, I sure as heck don't condone it, but I thought it was an interesting article and amazing to think that it actually did it.
And in the U.S., I think the limit is 400 feet.
400 feet.
And line of sight. So, you know,
I don't know if he was line of sight because he went straight up.
No, I don't think you could be line of sight. So,
matter of fact, when he landed it, now that I think about it, because he landed it right back by where he was, and it looked like he was wearing one of those first person viewing goggles as well.
Well, unless you have in the U.S., the rule is, and I'm not a lawyer, so if I'm saying anything that's wrong, you know, don't come after me. Read it up with yourself. But is that you got to be line of sight. If you have the goggles on, you can't be line of sight. So, So what that would say is, if you have the goggles on, you have to have a spotter. Mm-hmm. If you're going by the technical letter of the law. Now, I wanted to talk about this article because, you know, now the weather's starting to get better in certain parts of the country and here in the U.S. and eventually in other parts like where you live, Tim, and Christina lives.
Hopefully it gets better.
it eventually will be getting better. Maybe if you got a drone, you're going to be going out flying. Is to, you know, respect other people and respect the rules. Because while you may have fun doing this, you know, you do this in the U.S. and you take down a plane, and not only have you killed all these people, but you may destroy the hobby and that kind of stuff. And killing the people is more of the issue here, of course. Risk is just not worth
it. People like this that damage the hobby for other people.
Exactly, because you don't even have to injure anybody, but people see this thing, and the authorities see it and say it's reckless, and you start getting a bad name for the hobby. Because if you're a responsible drone flyer, it can be a very fun hobby, and it could be, you know, they take, you know, mine has a 12-megapixel camera on it, and it gives you these options to take photos and video that you couldn't take with your regular camera. I took mine out Sunday, and I got to tell you, when I get mine up, I've never gone even to 400 feet. I think the highest I've gone is maybe a little over 300. And at 300 feet, that little Mavic is hard to see.
Oh, it's you cannot see it.
Yeah, and
that's why it's got a 5 mile. I think it's a 5 mile range, right?
Yes, it can. There's no way you could see it that far.
There's no way you could see it. It's right. Like, why have a 5 mile range? There's no way in the world. I don't think I could see it a half mile away, nevertheless five.
So part of the limiting factor for me is not just the law, but those things aren't cheap. And
yes.
I want to get a lot more use out of it before I start pushing it too far, because you know, you lose that thing and there goes all that money. So if you're going to fly your drone, if you're going to get a drone, or if you already have one, you're going to be flying it as the weather gets better. You know, fly it responsibly.
Absolutely.
All right. The next story I had, Tim, is this is up in your neck of the woods. Let's see if I can find this guy. Where is this guy? Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Do I not have him? All right, I'm going to have to...
I thought I saw it this morning. No, it's the New York Street Photographer 50 Years.
Yep.
It's the fourth one down.
I see that. I didn't have the link pulled up.
Oh.
And now I don't have my keyboard in front of me, so hold on. Dadgummit. All right. So the next one I had up is up in your neck of the woods is this guy. He's been shooting in New York with a 1940s camera. Luis Mendez, I think is his name. Have you ever seen this guy up there?
No.
So apparently he goes out shooting every day.
Wow.
Yeah. So for the last 50 plus years, he's been shooting with his 1940s camera. It was a speed graphic press camera. And he wears like era clothes. So he tries to dress the part too. And he goes out and he shoots. And, you know, this camera is like a, you know, Instamatic type thing. It spits out the image and he hands it to people. And you can buy it from him or he will take donations too. He's had to take some odd jobs here and there to make ends meet. But he makes a lot of his money from doing this. And I'm sure he's not wealthy, but he has, you know, earned and got a huge collection of street photos. He's taken street photos of people over the years. And he just, if you listen to this little video of his, this little interview that somebody did of him, he talks a lot about how he lives. He had a nice quote. He lives to take photos or something like that. I can't find it right now. But, you know,
it's like, why do I breathe every day?
Yeah. Somebody asked him, why do you go out and take photos every day? And he said, why do I breathe every day?
Right.
It's just in him that he does that. And I know maybe not people who are quite this committed, but I know I know a lot of photographers who photography is, you know, is them. You can't separate them from photography. It's what they love doing.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's a big camera, and I think if I read the article correctly, the biggest problem he's running into is
film.
The film that he's using has been discontinued in 2016, so he's going to have issues with getting film for the camera.
Yeah, that's sad. You know, obviously technology moves on, and for the people who stick with the old technology, it gets harder and harder over the years to keep that up. But he talks about, you know, it's like he's talking about there, he loves how people are amazed when he hands in the photo and you know, that feeling of joy giving that to somebody else. It's a great story. I can't play the audio here, but go and check it out over, I think it's a YouTube video. Yeah, I'll link to it in the show notes, but it's also an article on Petapixel of Luis Mendez.
And that's cool.
Maybe he's in different areas of New York. So if you're over there, you know, and you see him, that'd be awesome. I know of two now, like feature people, that Naked Cowboy guy.
Mm-hmm.
I've definitely seen him.
I've seen him a couple times.
And then now Lewis.
Yeah, I wonder where he is. I mean, the pictures they show of him are nondiscreet. I guess I'll have to look in the video. Maybe I can recognize the area.
I think he talks a little bit about he starts at different places. It's not always the same part of the city.
Yeah. Mm.
All right. There you go. That was, I thought that was kind of inspiring to listen to him starting back in 50 years ago. I mean, that's incredible.
Oh God.
To still be doing it.
Yeah. I hope that, well, I mean, when did I start shooting? I guess, I bought my first DSLR 1990 or 91. So I'm up over 25 years shooting. Not nearly like him, though.
Not like him. No, not like him. Not the dedication. Not the dedication of him. You and I both do this as a hobby, as a side thing. He is, for the most part, sound like he was making a living from this. But that can't be an easy living to go out and you know, get business that way every day. And do that kind of stuff. And especially in New York, where I don't know what he does in the winter and stuff like that. It didn't talk about that in the article. But, you know, you guys don't have year-round great weather.
No, we don't. And not recently, that's for sure.
All right. Moving on. You had something that I got the same email as you.
Okay.
The one from the Lightroom Queen. And I had to, I pulled up, I don't know who out there is a, Creative Cloud member. I am. And maybe you're just the Photoshop Lightroom, or you may be the whole suite. I'm the whole suite. And when I pulled up the Creative Cloud, it said there was no updates. So I
updated it just a little while ago. And the both the Photoshop and the Lightroom CC or Classic CC, I updated. I didn't bother installing the Lightroom CC.
I had to tell Adobe Creative Cloud to check for updates. And when I did that, it came back and it pulled all that stuff in.
Right.
So if you don't see it, if you don't see the updates, I don't think it's huge updates unless this is something that really impacts you. But click that, make it do that, and it will do an update. And there's a lot of products that have an update. I didn't check out which ones, what the update is for each one, but when I looked, it was both Lightrooms, it was Photoshop, it was I think Premiere, mm-hmm. maybe After Effects, Adobe Edition, and some more. Actually, I have it. Hold on, I'll tell you. Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign. I don't have those. I don't have InDesign loaded. Premiere, After Effects, Lightroom, both of them, and some others too. So yeah, I did say Premiere. I don't see Edition. So if you're an Adobe Edition user, maybe it did not have an update. Anyway, let's talk about the Lightroom updates. And Lightroom Queen, we've had on the show before, she did go through some of the bigger updates that were in this.
And one of the things I think I really have to say here is, seems like Lightroom has been made, or Adobe has been making a lot of changes recently to Lightroom. And I don't know if that is because they're starting to feel some of their other competitors breathing down their neck. But I like we talked, I think, the last time, 2 weeks ago, the speed of Lightroom has definitely improved.
Yes.
I've definitely felt that. And now you have this where I've dabbled in the profiles before and definitely the camera calibration, but it doesn't seem like they always had a lot of the lenses I had were in there. And that's probably because there's some older Sony and or Minolta lenses versus Canon and Nikon. It's like they have every single lens in there. But it seems like they're putting this more in the front, and the way Victoria talks about it is that it's now meant to select what you want to do first before you start editing.
Right.
So you want to pick a portrait or a landscape and then start editing your picture.
Yeah, and AD's out there in chat, and he's in the process of moving, so we appreciate him taking some time to come out here. He's right now called 21.9 Gaming. Which is a YouTube channel of his. If you go and check it out, if you haven't checked it out before, and people like Luminar are innovating and they're coming up with stuff. If you're the Adobes of the world, whenever you're the leader, if you act like the leader, you won't be the leader forever.
You will get picked off. Yes,
you have to run scared all the time and continue to innovate, because the Luminars of the world, the On Ones of the world, they're running scared. They're going to continue to try and innovate and come after you. And in the end, it helps out all of us consumers. Because, mm-hmm. yeah, Luminar has come out with a great product. I own it. And they're going to continue to improve. And I know that sometime this year they talked about maybe doing the whole workflow deal. And so maybe that's AD can't tell us what's coming up, right. But we'll be looking for that. Maybe we'll have him come on and talk to us about it when it comes on. But tonight, let's talk about the Lightroom updates, because you mentioned, the order. And one of the first things you want to do when you import it is click the camera profile, right?
Correct.
And choose the camera profile. Because for me, can y'all see this? I have this guy up here. This guy where I can create some of my own camera profiles mm-hmm. when I go out and shoot. And other times you may want to use others. So I like to, I might have a different one. It's not always the same one that I'm shooting, but it's at the bottom. And I always like it to be, the main stuff I'm going to use and then work my way down. So they move the profile from down toward the bottom of the panel.
Right, where people probably never went.
Yeah, where a lot of times, I might have forgotten. To do it until I got later on. Crap. But they moved it up to the basic panel near the top. And she's showing it here where you can see you already had the treatment, the color black and white, and now they have the profile, Adobe Color, right there. And then this little, these little four squares that you might just barely be able to make out in the video here.
Right.
Those are four squares. When you click that, it then opens up, you know, some more little thumbnails to show you, you know, by choosing which one you use, Adobe Color or Landscape or Portrait or whatever else, what other ones you might have, what that's going to do to the image, how it's going to change the image. And then you can even, if you look over here, you can see little stars. So let's say you use a certain one the most, you can star them to make them easier to find. When you only have four or five, it may be really easy to find, but as you grow and get more, you might, you know, you might want to, you know, put the ones that you like the most, to star them and use them there.
Exactly.
So she did talk a little bit about, well, you know, this is almost sounding like presets.
Right.
Because, you know, hey, you know, what's the deal here? I already have presets. But she doesn't show an example here. But the one thing you can do with these is you can use them in a creative way, too, not just for the normal way we used to use profiles. You can use them to give a certain look to an image, but then you can change the amount. So when you load a preset, so let's say I bought 80s presets and I load it. When you load it, it changes all the sliders. You know, it changes the slider, whatever adjustments that were done in that preset to give it that look. It changes the sliders for that. And then you can go into those sliders and modify them a little bit. Maybe you want it to look a little different.
Right.
Maybe you use that as a starting point. With this, with these profiles, it doesn't change your sliders. So if you had added a little bit of color saturation here, or you had maybe changed your exposure a little bit, when you add this, it doesn't change
those
sliders.
It goes over top of it.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So it's not really a layer, but it has that semi impact of like a layer, sort of. And then you can actually, you know, change the power of it or whatever, the amount of it too, there. So interesting. If you have the update, go out there and look and do that. It also, I think they redid the Find Faces algorithm.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't try that. And I use that all the time.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the second things I do after I input my pictures. And I always think it's very good, and it's amazing how it picks it up. And sometimes, which really surprised me, is like if I have a picture on the wall in the background, and it's way back, it picks it up and identifies the right person. Yeah. But every once in a while, it identifies something, and I'm like, yeah, I don't even see a face within this picture. Nevertheless, that it's my son or my daughter or something.
Yeah. Well, they say they've rewritten that, and it's supposed to be, you know, I guess a more powerful system. Plus, there's a way where you can tell it to start over again, maybe, if you wanted it to start over.
I think the way I understood it was if it started to identify a face as a certain person, you can erase it to a new starting point on that person.
Yeah. The one thing, more thing about the profiles, you know, presets, any of us could make a preset, export it, and share it with anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I think profiles are going to be a little bit more difficult and take some developer tools to create. So your average user like me is not going to be creating profiles and sharing them. This may be something maybe AD or somebody like that might do, but it's not going to be your average user is not creating profiles and sharing them.
Right.
I thought there was more here. In her article, I didn't see it, but I thought there was a few other things they did with it.
Yeah,
I don't think there were any speed increases.
No, I didn't
in this
see
one.
New profiles, changes to presets, filter on sync status, store originals on NAS. You can now select your NAS as a custom location for original photos, particularly useful when migrating from Lightroom Classic. Huh, that's interesting. Grain sliders, sharpening and noise reduction sliders, web gallery share options. Yeah, a couple of others.
Yeah, I know they changed some of the Facebook APIs or something like that, but nothing for me. They do promise that there'll be more speed improvements coming up, and I look forward to that. I tell you that I've edited a couple of games. And that slowdown, I think I mentioned this before, the slowdown that I had mid-edit, or not mid-edit, multiple times during the edit, where I had to close out Lightroom and come back in, that's gone. So it's remained the same, basically the same speed throughout the whole edit, which was awesome. If you're suffering from that problem and had to close Lightroom, reopen it every now and then to keep your speed up, mm-hmm. you'll be pleased by that being gone. All right. We'll get two more articles then before we head into the end. And both of these are kind of fun articles, I think. And so up first, we'll do mine. And this is something I wanted to do this with my boys because I don't think I convinced anybody else to do it. But this is where they're taking a leaf blower.
250-mile-per-hour winds. Yeah, that's
250
crazy.
250-mile-per-hour winds, a leaf blower, and like blowing it in their face and taking photos of that. And it's just some of these looks are just incredible. You know, if you have really small kids, you might not want to do this. But if you convince maybe your teenagers to do it, it's kind of funny to see what happens to your face. I'm sure somebody like me who's got a little bit more stuff in my face, it may make an even funnier look. But we'll just scroll through a few of these for humor. I mean, this one is not that funny because the guy on the right looks like he's just, you know, I don't know, drunk. This lady, definitely, you can see, you know, the impact going on in her. That's hilarious.
I mean, the next one doesn't even look like the same person.
Yeah. This one is barely changed. I get her skin must be tight.
Yeah. Her cheeks, definitely.
This one, I think, is the first one we saw.
Mm-hmm.
This one,
looks like she's in a rock concert.
Well, yeah, but you can look at the hair. And, you know, I think my reaction would be to close my eyes, too, because, you know, all that blowing in your eyes would be crazy. And then that one's pretty tame. That one looks like she's – and it got the dog, too, who's just turning her head away saying, I don't want any part of this.
Yeah, I'm not stupid. I'm not going to look into it.
She almost looks like she's drunk too.
Mm-hmm.
And then this lady who almost, if it wouldn't be for her left cheek,
it would
just unfazed.
Be the hair blown up. Right? Yeah. It's when they open their mouth and the air gets cold. That's when it really does the deformation.
All right. That's hilarious. All right. Last up, Tim, you had,
a feel good story. I think
feel good story. And, you know, I've heard of these kind of things in the past. This isn't the first one of these I've heard, but it's always interesting when these things happen. Why don't you walk us through the...
Yeah, this camera was lost at sea a couple of years ago. And during a cleanup in Taiwan, a group of school children were cleaning up the beach. And a little 11-year-old boy found something shiny and was covered completely in barnacles except for the screen there. And at first I thought that was the actual camera, but apparently it was in a waterproof camera housing, and you could see him holding it there.
Yeah.
And amazingly, if I was the company of this waterproof housing, I would want this picture for myself because the camera was inside completely sealed and still operational after 2 years. So they were able to power up the camera. First, after deciding what to do with it, they weren't sure if they should actually look through the pictures because they felt like they were invading somebody's privacy. But then they finally decided with the school kids to go through it, and they found the pictures, decided to put them up on Facebook. And within 2 days after the picture the post had gotten retransmitted and thousands upon thousands of people seeing it, somebody recognized one of the people in there as a friend, got in touch with them, and the person got in touch with it. They had been on vacation in Japan. They were scuba diving, as you could see in these pictures, and she apparently dropped the camera and lost it, and it floated, I guess the currents took it away 150 miles to Taiwan, where they found the camera, and they were able to get the camera back to the original owner, and they said it was perfectly functioning, nothing wrong with it.
So you said floated. So did the housing keep it floating and didn't sink?
They didn't say that. Just that the friend noticed the photos and that she was a student from a university, and it turns out she was vacationing in September 2015, 155 miles east of Taiwan when she dropped the camera, and then the camera itself traveled 155 miles to the west shores of Taiwan and was discovered two years later. So I wouldn't have thought that it would, but I guess it must have. It must have been somewhat buoyant. It obviously wasn't dropping like a rock. So I guess the current lifted it up and it got caught in the currents.
That kind of distance, it couldn't have hit the bottom. And I don't know how deep the water is there, whether it would have stayed the same if it went all the way to the bottom. 2 years with the battery.
Still working. That's amazing.
That's something. You know, sometimes you wonder if these stories are true.
Right. Or did they plug it in and it charged up? So now they're saying that's probably more likely. But it was a waterproof camera housing and inside was a fully functioning Canon G12 that immediately powered on. The batteries inside were still held to charge. I don't know.
I wonder when they said that it was still held to charge, like when they charged it or did it already still.
But they wrote immediately powered on. Yeah,
that may be. I don't know. Either way, if they found the camera and were able to return it, you know, social media helped them return it there. I would have had the adults look at the images first before the kids did. Maybe they did. I don't know.
Yeah, the way they wrote it was like they showed it in school and quickly went through the pictures. Like, yeah.
Hopefully after adults looked at it, because you never know what's on the camera. And, you know, then you can let the kids look at it. And even if you tell them, you're looking at it first, I would have already looked at it myself before showing it to the kids. But that's an interesting story. You're right. I think that would be an ad for that housing company.
Yeah.
To put out there.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would do.
Interesting. All right. Well, that is the topics we have tonight. I did have one thing. You know, I like to, at the end of each show here, Tim, when we don't have a guest, is to like feature some type of photographer or talk about somebody. And I know I've talked about Thomas Heaton in the past and some other people that are probably already extremely popular. And I guess if you have somebody that maybe is not that popular, let me use another term, that not a lot of people are aware of yet, that you think is a great photographer that not a lot of people are aware of yet, and you would like to point them out, you know, send me an email at podcast@jpegderaw.com. Or contact me, you know, through Facebook or something like that, and I'd love to look them up. I like to find photographers who have YouTube channels where I can watch their YouTubes, because when we get done here, I'm going to go hit the treadmill. But but even outside of that, they don't have a YouTube channel, just a website, something I can go and look at. I always like to find and discover new photographers and, right, you know, point them out. Right now, for me, the ones I'm finding are they're not you know, they're not brand new where nobody knows about them. So, but I wanted to talk about this guy just a little bit. And he is Dave Morrow. If anybody has run across Dave Morrow, he has a website over there at davemorrowphotography.com. And he has a YouTube channel. And YouTube is what I've been watching of his YouTubes, YouTube videos. And while I'm on treadmill and that kind of stuff. And this is a guy who was a Boeing aerospace engineer, making a, you know, six-figure income, which I guess six-figure income could be exactly $100,000, or it could be $999,999. But let's just say it's somewhere in that group. And what am I looking at? Dave is great. Oh, I was looking on Facebook, and Greg says Dave is great. Yes. And so, because I forgot to watch our website. Hopefully nobody's watching over on the website, because if you are, I've missed you. Dave is, you know, he has quit his income, you know, where he's making at least $100,000 a year, was making that. And now he travels and does, you know, location, landscape photography, lives out of his, I think he has a Nissan Pathfinder or something like that. Nissan Pathfinder, if I remember right, where he lives out of that for most of the year. Maybe it wasn't a Pathfinder, but it's something like that. Lives out of that for like 9 months out of the year and travels across the country. You know, he might go to some place and spend, you know, 6 weeks there because he wants to get, you know, all these photos. And I think he does all his video with GoPros. And he walks through a lot of how he's, you know, what he's looking for when he's shooting and what he's shooting. So if you're into landscape photography, he's a great guy to follow over there on YouTube and on his website. I think, you know, if you want to know more about him, he does even, I think, workshops and stuff like that. But I'm watching one right now. I'm actually going to watch it when I go on the treadmill, and how he makes money now, because I doubt he saved up enough money to live off. You know, when you make this change and go from, you know, a steady job making, you know, probably health care and steady income and everything else to flipping over and doing photography full time, you got to find a way to earn money from it.
Right.
And so,
yes, sooner or later.
I don't know how many workshops and stuff he has, but generally, you know, a lot of photographers, especially with what he's doing, the way he talks about how he goes and spends, you know, 9 months out of the year doing this kind of stuff, he might, you know, I don't know how much time he has for workshops, so he's definitely not doing them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he quit back in 2015. He's been doing this, and let's see, there's his YouTube channel, which just search for Dave Morrow, MAMORROW. Greg out in chat says, Dave is great. Check out Olaf Photo. He's pretty good. So, yes, every time I mention something like this, people mention different names, and I love that. So I get to go out and check them out and and have more stuff to look at. But give Dave a look and like his YouTube channel if you're into that, or contact him if you want to. All right, so that's all I had for tonight, Tim, and we're near getting toward the end. But as we wrap this up, let's talk a little bit about JPEG Draw. And we just entered April 3rd, just entered the April photo contest. We're just wrapping up the March one, starting round one of the voting, and we'll be announcing a winner before long. If you want to enter, there's two ways to do it, either through our website at jpegdraw.com/contest, where you have both ways to enter, both the regular group or the beginner group. And this month, the theme, although that says March, is that right? Let's refresh that. There we go.
How about that?
That's funny. I guess it just had the cash out there when I pulled it up. It's not March. It's April. And the theme for April is open. We did do a theme from both of the groups for March. And I think this is what generally happens, Tim. There's lots of interest and lots of, because I'll put four or five items out there. What do you want? You want to do this, this, and this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of feedback on people voting on what they want to do. And I think it's the, you know, the idea of, hey, let's do this theme or let's do that theme. And I love themes. Themes are great. But what ends up happening is when you actually go out and do it, you end up getting stuck.
With fewer people.
I can't really think of something. Or maybe the theme was outdoors and it's snowing and stormy where you were the whole month, so you couldn't go and do it. So we're going to alternate back and forth from time to time with open, where you can do whatever you want, or with a theme. So this month for April, for both groups, we're back to being open. But we'll come back to themes in the future. So if you like themes, they'll come back. If you like open, that's what this month is. You have until the end of the month to enter. And if you can enter through the website, like I just said, or you can go to either of the Facebook groups and enter there. The album is pinned at the top of the page in both groups. And the links to them are right here at the bottom of that article. Or you can just go to Facebook and search for JPEG Draw. If you like the video and you want to subscribe to either our YouTube, which if you're watching on YouTube, you should be subscribed already. But if you want to subscribe through YouTube, or you can go over to our subscribe page, which is jpegdraw.com/subscribe, and you have all the different ways to subscribe to the audio format or the video format. And then we also have, it started off as a once a month show. We're now doing it twice a month, and we're having to take a little hiatus as AD is moving and getting settled in. Yeah, that move is a lot of work that has to be done with the move. Mm-hmm. So as he gets moved and settled in, we'll come back around. But we're up to, I think, show 24. We've done 24, so we've now done it twice a month, so you can't divide that by 12 and say, oh, it's 2 years. But I think we actually are getting close to the 2-year mark if we're not over it. But that one, we don't put an audio feed out because AD is doing reviews of these images, and you really need to see them. So the video is available on iTunes, YouTube, and Vimeo, and we do it live, so it's also on Facebook there too. But go out and subscribe to one of those. You can subscribe to it on iTunes if you want to get it there, or it is also on our YouTube channel. And, of course, we welcome you to come and watch live where we do that one, generally Sunday nights, somewhere around 7 to 8. Generally, I think it's 7 or 7.30. But anyway, I'll post it when it goes out there. And Tim and I are generally here on Tuesdays. Are generally here on Tuesday nights. So come and watch us live on Tuesday nights. And Tim, you're going to be traveling to the Atlanta area in the this month or next month.
Yeah, April 30th to May 2nd or something.
And guess what? The timing is awful. Tim and I have never met. So Tim and I live in different parts of the country. We've never actually met. And while you're going to be down here in Atlanta, I'm going to be traveling on business. So even if you had time, I don't know if you're going to have time, but even if you had time for us to hook up for a quick dinner or something like that, I can't do it because I'm going to be out of town.
It will happen. Don't worry. Yeah,
eventually it'll happen. But anyway, that's it for this week. I guess we'll be back next week. We'll see. Watch out for I post it as soon as I know for sure. But until next week, keep it raw. Good night, everybody.
All right.